This episode of the Nickelodeon Animation Podcast is brought to you by Big Bob's Beepers.
I'm Big Bob Pataki, the Beeper King. Remember, we'll beat any advertised price, unless it's lower. Come on down to our Beeper Emporium this Saturday for our annual Spelling Bee sale. If my daughter Helga doesn't win the contest, you get your first beeper free. And remember,
Big Bob's Beepers!
Not available at any retail store near you.
Nick, 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 Nick.
Nickelodeon!
From Nickelodeon Studios in Burbank, California, this is the Nickelodeon Animation Podcast. Hi, I'm your host, Hector Navarro. I am so thrilled to be here in the recording booth at Nickelodeon Animation Studios. We're talking today to Mr. Butch Hartman. He has been here for over 15 years making cartoons for Nickelodeon. The Fairly Odd Parents first premiered as a Nicktoon show in 2001. That means that 2016 is the 15th anniversary of the show, which is incredible. Cannot wait to talk to him. Let's get on with the show. Very nice to meet you. Thanks so much for doing this.
A pleasure. You're dressed very nice today. People can't see it, but let me just tell you, the people listening, sexy man sitting here.
I appreciate that. Yeah. I was going to tell you, you're in phenomenal shape.
Oh,
you're in really good shape.
Thank you.
You know, I think you're one of those rare breed of animators that are like, I think you take your fitness very seriously.
I do.
You look great.
I do indeed. I've got like 7 clones of myself at home. I was born in 1871.
So. That's why your cartoons are so funny. That's because you've heard all of the jokes. You've heard every joke.
I've heard it all. Yeah. I've heard it all and I'm done with everything.
Let's start with, Butch, do you remember your first memory of animation?
I do. That's interesting you should ask that. Yeah. I have a couple memories. I have 2 memories that are pretty vivid. The first memory I have is my father took me to the theater back in the day. This is back before you could look at anything you wanted on your phones. I know it's hard to believe. In ancient time, we went to the movie theater and we saw The Jungle Book. When it first came out, Disney's Jungle Book.
So
and I remember there's a scene where the elephants are walking through the jungle. And I got up and I was marching like the elephants in the aisle. And I remember that very vividly because I remember the design of the elephants and what they looked like. And I remember that whole, just the look of the Jungle Book really stuck with me. And that's why that movie's still very special to me.
Did you do that a lot? Did you used to watch cartoons and kind of do the voices and emulate it or like look at how they were moved? And how the animation was done and how the characters moved and then maybe recreated or try to act it out, anything like that?
I did. I remember the first thing I ever remember drawing and getting attention for was I drew a picture of my kindergarten teacher. She had us all draw. It was assignment. Was everyone draw a picture of me?
Yeah.
The teacher said. Not me. I didn't say it. The teacher said. And then we all drew a picture. No big deal. And my teacher started raving about it, like my picture that I drew.
Yeah.
And I had no idea what the big deal was, but she made a big deal out of it, and I realized, oh, wow, if I draw pictures, I can get attention from adults, and maybe the hitting will stop, you know? Yeah. So there was no hitting.
It's great.
Joking. Yeah. But so I realized I could do that, so I really started to emulate. I would look at, and I loved comic books, too.
Yeah.
And I would collect Marvel Comics and DC, and I would actually draw out of the comic books.
Yeah.
And I always tell people out there, too, especially aspiring animators and writers, if you like to do what you do, hang out with other people that do it. Because I used to hang out with other nerds back before being a nerd was very cool.
That's so rare. How'd you find them
before the internet? Oh, in high school? You kidding? No, in high school. Come on, it was high school.
You gravitated towards each other.
Yeah, I think our zits attracted each other. Yeah. There was like a magnetic pull.
Yes.
Yeah, so, but I don't know, we would hang out together and just draw cartoons, and we would draw comic books, and we played Dungeons and Dragons when that first came out, you know?
Yeah.
And so my storytelling abilities were starting to form, and I really realized I love to tell stories. I love to make my own comics and my own. I didn't make my own animation at the time, but I had a Super 8 camera. We would make our own movies and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, and I would take, you know, my brother would be a space Avenger, and he'd have a squirt gun, and he would go like this as we shot the movie. Then I'd get the film back. He had to send it out to get developed. It would come back, and I would scratch little laser beams in the emulsion of the film.
Cool.
It was high quality special effects.
Yeah, absolutely.
Transformers quality.
Let's go back to this for a second, because I'm a huge comic book guy as well. Did you have a favorite comic book character, superhero series growing up? What was your favorite? What's some of your influences?
I was a big-time Superman fan.
Sure.
Superman for sure. And then the 1978 movie with Christopher Reeve came out.
Yeah.
And to me, still the best Superman movie.
Yeah.
But I love Superman, and I loved Spider-Man, too. I love Spider-Man. I'd love to get more deep on people and go like, no, I really love this secondary character in the Justice League. You know, I really like just the classic guys. And
it makes a lot of sense because you just said the word right there, the keyword classic.
Yeah.
I think you've probably heard this before.
Your cartoons, Butch, they feel classic, even though they're modern. Do you know what I mean? They have this great feeling of warmth and sort of classic Warner Brothers style, Hanna-Barbera style, these great, great things, and yet they're being made in the 2000s and the 2010s. And
well, I really appreciate that, because I mean, I think when we use the word classic, I think what that comes down to, I hope it means for most people, is it's good storytelling, because you want the story to last forever. And I think when, you know, when I first sold Fairly Odd Parents here at Nickelodeon, one of the first things they asked me was, do you want to spend a lot of money on the art? And I said, well, no, I want to spend money on the writing, the storytelling, because I mean, it'd be nice if we could spend money on the art, but the storytelling has to come first, because an example I point to is the Far Side comic strip.
Sure.
Well, one of the most horribly drawn comic strips of all time, but always funny. Yeah. Always really funny, you know? And so it doesn't matter what it looks like as much. I mean, look at The Simpsons. That's a great example. Sure. The Simpsons look great now because it's The Simpsons, but when it first started, it was a very ugly...
Very crude.
Very crude cartoon. Absolutely. And, but still now it's got that style that we all love because it devolved into what it is today. So, but again, the stories were hilarious on that show. And that was the point I was making,
So you were at CalArts, but then you got a job, I think, at Don Bluth.
I did. It was my first job.
American Tale.
You have done your homework, my friend.
I have.
A round of applause from me. That's very good. Wow.
It's easy. What else do you have?
What else? Yeah, don't give yourself too much credit.
Yeah,
I'm just joking. I'm joking. Very handsome. No, I was working at, actually, I was at CalArts. Well, mm-hmm. I was at a four-year animation program.
Sure.
In our third year. And we had to make a film every year. I made my first two films. And then my third year film came up. And I heard that they were looking for in-betweeners at Don Bluth because he was making an animated feature called American Tale. Mm-hmm. And a lot of us were like, oh my gosh, we could go get jobs as in-betweeners. This would be so exciting.
Yeah.
People who don't know, an in-betweener is someone who does the boring drawings in between the big extreme drawings back in the day. That's what they would do.
Yes.
And they still do it. But anyway, so two of my buddies and I went down to Don Bluth Studios in the Valley, and we got an in-between test. It was basically, there was drawing one they gave us, and then there was drawing three, and then we had to put drawing two in the middle, right?
Yeah.
And so we went home, and we worked really hard on our drawing, and took it back, and we all got jobs as animators on this movie, and it was pretty cool. So I realized that my first, they paid you by the foot of film you did.
Wow.
So my first scene was Fievel the mouse, little Fievel, and he was sleeping. He was just going... And just him breathing in and out. That's all it was. But it was like 800 feet.
Yeah.
And I made like $1,000. And I was like, oh my gosh. And I did like four drawings. And it was like, but they just repeated it over and over.
Sure.
This is the easiest one I ever made in my life. Oh my gosh. I'm a successful animator. My next scene was like 10 feet long, but it had 4,000 mice in it. And they were all, they had a dance. And that was like, okay, I see the good and bad of all this. And I think you had to do like 90 feet of animation. And I did 88 feet. So I didn't get credit on the film.
But to get credit, you had to do 90.
You had to get 90 feet. Yeah. So,
I think now all of our listeners know.
Yes,
Butch Hartman was on.
All those American Tale fans who are huge fans.
Yeah. There's a lot. There's a lot.
I know.
After working on some shows, you also did Tom and Jerry Kids.
Yes, Tom
and Jerry Kids. Which I loved as a kid.
Really?
I remember that.
So someone watched it. That's good.
I do. I remember that.
Very nice.
So you did that, and then you went over to Warner Brothers for a bit. Hanna-Barbera. Hanna-Barbera.
Actually, Tom and Jerry Kids was at Hanna-Barbera.
Was at Hanna-Barbera. Mm-hmm. And then and you were there when they were sort of in the early stages of like turning into Cartoon Network, correct?
Yeah,
like
I got there the year before Turner bought them. And then they became Cartoon Network.
Yes, yes.
And Fred Seibert came in and started running the place. You know, Fred started the shorts cartoon program there.
Yeah.
And really opened up a big doorway for all of us young artists to pitch cartoon ideas. And which is really funny is I never really realized I wanted to do cartoons on my own until someone opened up the doorway. And it was like, wow, we can do our own cartoons. I had no ideas. I had no clue what I was doing. I knew I could write jokes and I could write stories. So I teamed up with a couple of guys who worked on some ideas. Mm-hmm. And they weren't the greatest, but we kept going and going. And then I ended up... every cartoon I did got a little better. Better. The character designs are great, but the story was bad.
They were pretty good, Butch. They were knocking yourself right now, but they were pretty good. Here's the funny thing. I'm doing my research about some of the shorts you worked on over there.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't even have to look up the short Fish and Chips.
Fish and Chip,
because I remembered that. I'm like, Fish and Chip, the cat that was like Scottish or something, and then Shark. Yeah, I remember that. And I looked it up to confirm. I'm like, yep, that's Butch.
Thanks
that's
for remembering
great.
It.
So
yeah.
That stuck in there. I remember Gramps.
Gramps, yeah.
And then you did one other one. You did
Hillbilly Blue.
Hillbilly Blue,
Hillbilly
that's right.
Hillbilly Blue, yeah.
Great voices in that.
Oh,
that
yeah, yeah.
That
was the great Jeff Bennett in there, yeah.
You could see, in my opinion, you could see the sort of early Butch Hartman coming through. I think you could see stuff that would eventually show up and be crystal clear Butch Hartman in Fairly Odd Parents.
Oh, cool.
So they're so much fun to watch. They're great. Odd Parents, Fairly Let's go back to how you put together the pitch for Fairly Odd Parents. Was this something that was in response to what you thought a network was looking for? Did you actually get like a mandate from a network saying we're looking for this kind of cartoon? Or was it an idea that you just had? Because I got to tell you, just a side note, just the premise alone, though, I think is the most brilliant, pure, distilled like cartoon idea. Where did that come from?
I was working on Johnny Bravo, and this was back in 97. And Fred Seibert at Hanna-Barbera, he was doing the What a Cartoon series.
Yep.
All the short cartoons. And he was leaving to come over to Nickelodeon, and he said, "Hey Butch, I'm starting basically the same thing at Nickelodeon. We're gonna call it the Oh Yeah Cartoon Series. You got any ideas?"
Yeah.
But I was working on Johnny Bravo at the time, and I said, "No, Fred, I'm kind of loyal over here to Johnny Bravo. I'm not gonna leave." He goes, "Well, okay. Well, the slots are filling up. Let me know when you have an idea." About 6-7 months go by, Johnny Bravo finishes. They're not picking it up. Now I don't have a job.
Right.
So I go, okay, I'm tired of working for other people. I'm going to come up with my own thing. Had no idea at all. And so I call up Fred. I go, "You got any slots left?" He goes, "I have one slot left." And so I said, okay, hung up the phone, and I sat at my desk, and I just drew a little boy. I'm going to draw a cartoon about a little – you always write what you know. I'm going to write a cartoon about a little boy. And I had other ideas I'd been working on at the time, but I wasn't really happy with them. So I drew a little boy. It was Timmy Turner. I was going to name him Mike after my brother Mike, but we had a fight that day. So I scratched out Mike, and I named up my other brother Timmy. You know, I have a brother, Tim Hartman.
Great.
And so Timmy, and then I drew – I wanted to be able to take Timmy and put him places very easily. I didn't want to be stuck because I was a writer at this time. I didn't want to be stuck for a story transition. I'm like, what can I do? Okay, I could give him science powers, like he could have science equipment, but I couldn't do science because Dexter's Lab had already come out.
Right.
Which is another part of the pitch process. If you're going to pitch a show, you have to look at the network and see what they already have.
Yes.
You don't ever want to take in something that they're already doing. Like Nickelodeon right now has got 17 martial arts cartoons on.
Yeah, sure.
You know, Kung Fu Panda, Ninja Turtles. You don't want to walk in with a martial arts cartoon right now. I don't think it's going to get picked up. So, but I said, okay, I can't do science, so I'll do magic. Magic would be fun. I didn't want to give Timmy the magic, though. I thought I'll give him a friend who has magic. So I drew Wanda first, whose name was Venus initially. Drew Wanda, and then I thought I need her, and she needs somebody to talk to other than Timmy. So I'd never seen a fairy godfather before. That's where I drew Cosmo. And I named Cosmo after this guy at Hanna-Barbera. Classic animator guy, Cosmo Anzalotti.
Yeah.
And Cos was this guy, he'd come in my office, he was Italian.
Yeah.
Yeah, Butch, he was a producer, right? And he would talk like this. And so I named him after Cosmo. I don't know if he knows that, but so I had Cosmo and Wanda, and then I thought kids love to have secrets.
Yeah.
So they can turn into stuff in his room. Like I thought they could turn into his pet. So like hamsters, and like birds, fish would be really funny.
Yeah.
So I turned him into fish, and I needed a villain, so I brought the babysitter in. And all of this took, not kidding around, about 15 minutes.
I believe it.
I just drew it all, and I was like, this is kind of funny. And I pitched it to Hanna-Barbera, and they turned it down. And Cartoon Network said, no, thank you, no.
Yeah.
And then Fred, I called Fred with the one slot open, and I went over to Nickelodeon and pitched it to him, and he bought it.
Hey, Timmy! I'm Cosmo.
I'm Wanda.
And we're your fairy godparents!
What do you think, Timmy?
I think I'm calling the cops.
That's where the rules came in. Because you had to put some limitations on these, like, you know, ultimately powerful characters. I can imagine it would have been pretty tough to write.
It's like, there's a problem happening and they can just make it go away. It's no. We have to, any rule we need, it just kind of comes out of the convenience of whatever a story problem we're having. Like, you know, oh no, Timmy, we can't do that. We stopped making breakfast wishes after 10:30.
Yeah.
You know, that type of stuff, you know, comes up. That's the kryptonite. You know, we need kryptonite for some reason.
Back to Superman.
Back to Superman.
I like that.
I wish Vicky had a really nasty cold so she couldn't babysit me this weekend.
Sorry, sweetie. No can do.
Wanda's right. The rules say that no fairy may grant a wish that directly causes harm to someone else.
No matter how much they deserve it.
But my wishes get my friends into trouble all the time.
But not directly!
Butch, have you seen that great thing that's happened on the internet where fans of Fairly Odd Parents have been photographing Cosmo and Wanda in the wild?
Oh my God, it's great. Yeah,
it's so hilarious.
Anything pink and green.
Yeah.
It's so great. And Starbucks has they have pink and green drinks.
I know, it's so funny.
I just did a talk at a college last week and I actually took a bunch of those photos and showed there's a pink and green house and a pink and green palette jack.
People are tweeting it on Instagram and they're saying, we see you, Cosmo and Wanda. You guys aren't slick. We see you hiding. I think that's so funny.
I think that's great. It's a real honor to know that that sort of stuff has entered like the zeitgeist. It's absolutely really, really cool. Right?
Do you have, I mean, yeah, people there, I can imagine now you're running into kids that have literally grown up with Fairly Odd Parents, which I think is incredible. It's so great. And you have a great story where you're running into kids now that are a little bit older that they're like, I understand some of the jokes now that I didn't get when I was a young little kid about like jokes about like the IRS and jokes about, you know, about adult things. And I'm like, that's really funny.
Well, exactly. Yeah. Because we just write what we like. That's what we do. You definitely have a client, which is your employer. You have to write for them, of course. But, you know, when you're doing your show, write what you like because you're going to love doing it. If you can love what you do, then it's not work. I tell people I haven't really worked in 30 years because I love what I do.
I want to talk to you a little bit about comedy, how important it is to you, what kind of comedic influences you had growing up, what do you like now? Yeah. I mean, you've talked about how key comedy is. Elaborate on that a little bit.
I think comedy is a lot harder to write than drama, number one.
Thank you.
People are very, very, they're very mistaken if they don't think it is, because drama, and this is not knocking drama writers, but drama is basically the story, you know, and there's ways to push drama. Obviously, it's not easy, but comedy is even harder because are people going to laugh at what you're doing? Does this tickle somebody's funny bone? And you can tell instantaneously if it does or not. But, you know, when I grew up, I just watched, I think, basic comedy stuff. I mean, I watched, you know, stuff like The Brady Bunch. I watched Happy Days. I watched Taxi. And I love Taxi. I love Cheers.
Yeah.
I loved... I love The Honeymooners. I would watch reruns of The Honeymooners over and over and over. And I still like to this day, because some of the comedies I love now, I love The Office.
Yeah.
You know, I always tell people The Office is a great example of comedy and why it works, because it doesn't matter what the location is. It takes place in a freaking office.
Yeah.
But it's the characters that really come to life.
Yes.
And everyone has their own favorite character. If you're writing anything, you make sure the characters are great. You want to follow them forever. Like I point to Star Wars. You want to follow those characters forever.
Yeah.
Except for the prequels. We'll not talk about those. But when I walked out of Star Wars as a kid, I want to be Han Solo. I want to be Luke Skywalker. You want to be those characters, like Spider-Man, any good character that lives for a long time.
Yeah.
I'm hoping kids out there, that's why they love Danny Phantom. He's a good character. And Timmy Turner and all the other characters try and come up with too.
Absolutely.
So but I think comedy really has to have even better characters than drama, I think.
But with Fairly Odd Parents, again, it's an incredible idea from the get-go.
Mm-hmm.
But thankfully, those cartoons are so funny. The characters are so funny, rather. The characters are so good that you can follow them anywhere.
One of the things I told the writers years ago is like, I don't care if these characters are in a white room. They have to be hilarious. I don't care if there's magic.
Yes.
They got to be funny without the magic.
Yes.
And that's what we try and push.
That's a great test. I mean, you guys could literally, I don't know if you've done the white room episode yet, but you could do that.
Right, exactly.
No magic in the episode.
We've done the no magic thing quite a bit.
We
did an episode where there was no sound. Timmy's tired of sound. He's like, oh, it's too noisy. So I wish there was no sound. And then so like for 8 minutes, there's no sound. And it's all pantomime. But then there's a meteor heading toward Dimmesdale. And Timmy's got to warn everybody, but he can't because he can't talk. And so he has to do charades with Cosmo. And he acts out a taco. And Cosmo gets it. You know, because taco, a meteor. You know, and then, you know, of course.
I wish the meteor was gone.
Meteor?
Fairly Odd Parents has been on officially as a show since 2001.
Yes.
You did shorts before that from like 1998 to 2001.
Mm-hmm.
Normally a show that lasts this long hits certain walls and becomes a bit stale. But you guys have managed to find ways to continue to bring in new characters, to tell new stories. Tell us a little bit about that sort of evolving storytelling that you guys go through.
Well, the cool thing is, Nickelodeon has been very, very generous and very open to letting me add stuff, which is great. I mean, first of all, picking it up for so many years, and we do our part too. We get good ratings for them, which is exciting.
Yeah.
But we do that. But the fact that they'll say, if you want to do anything with it, when we first wanted to have our first big change was Cosmo wanted to have a baby.
Yeah.
Poof, that was a big, big deal. That got some of our biggest ratings of all time, actually. That episode.
I remember that.
Yeah, right before kids started getting on phones. It was like before the phones came in, we still had the kids on TV. But we want to, again, like I said, write what you like and write what you know. I don't want the show to get boring for me either. I need to have stuff that, this is different. This is fun.
Mm-hmm.
Timmy can have this character come in or this character come in. Like we have characters now that are part of the show that never even existed 8 or 9 years ago, like Dark Laser is a character Timmy brought to life. Timmy had a magic copier and he copied a Darth Vader poster.
Yeah.
Copied a space bad guy poster.
Yeah.
And the space bad guy came to life, but now he's one of our funniest characters.
Yeah.
Because he's a super powerful guy that wants to kill Timmy Turner all the time. But now Mr. Crocker's our key villain we go to all the time.
Yeah.
We started with Vicky. Vicky's great. We kind of ran into a wall with Vicky because all Vicky wants. Vicky got kind of one note for a while.
Sure.
Gray Delisle, who does the voice, does a fantastic job yeah. as the character. But we started kind of experimenting with other villains, and I kept seeing in my head this Simpsons poster where the Simpsons has a million characters.
Yeah.
That's really what I always wanted for this show.
Oh.
I wanted a million characters. So yeah. I think we're almost up to a million.
I think so. Yeah.
Just about.
Greek people of this world, bow to me, your new leader. Dark Laser, surrender or face Flipsy, the flipping dog of doom. Man, I'd never get tired of that.
Here's another cool thing, too. You guys did live-action movies.
Yes, we did.
From Fairly Odd Parents, mm-hmm. which I think is amazing. Where did the idea for that come from? Was this something that you're like, if it's going to get done, I want to do it? Instead of somebody else doing a live-action adaptation, you know, somebody else at Nick or some other company? Or was it something that Nickelodeon was like, hey, we want to try this out?
They came to me and they said, we want to do a live-action movie.
So
and I
cool.
and I thought, this is awesome, of course, and thank you for asking me.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. I think Albert Brooks said it very wisely years ago. He said, if you only have 2 years to live, don't try and get a movie made. So we got the assignment to do the movie.
Yeah.
Again, I forget what year it was, but by the time the movie came out in 2010,
yeah.
it took about 3 years to get to the small silver screen, the television screen, but we mm-hmm. did that, and it was a big hit, and they gave us a second one to do. Mm-hmm. We did a Fairly Odd Christmas. The first one was Fairly Odd Grow Up Timmy Turner. Fairly Odd Movie. Then it was Fairly Odd Christmas.
And then Fairly Odd Summer.
Summer. Yeah, yeah. And the reason that came about, we were on a mountain in Vancouver for like 2 weeks shooting a North Pole movie with Santa and the elves in real snow, and I said, guys, next movie's in Hawaii, wink, wink, and they gave me a third movie, and I went fade in Hawaii. I don't care what the story is.
Doesn't matter.
We're in
That's
Hawaii.
That's awesome. That's brilliant.
So that was fun.
When did you know that you were going to do another show for Nickelodeon?
The Albie Hecht, who was running Nickelodeon at the time, mm-hmm. Fairly Odd Parents, we were doing our, we'd been picked up for our second season, It was doing really well.
Mm-hmm.
Took me out to dinner. And it was one of those moments. And again, I always tell people this, always be ready. Always have an idea. Because we're sitting at dinner. He was picking up our Fairly Odd Parents. I said, great. And you know, he goes, what else do you have?
Yep.
And I said, well, I have this other idea I've been toying with about a kid superhero who fights ghosts. He goes, great, mm-hmm. let's make it.
Yeah.
Just like that.
Just like that.
And I went, he goes, can you have it done by March? This was like in October. I said, yeah. And then my answer, of course, was, sure, I can. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And 2 years later, we finally got it done.
Yeah.
But Danny Phantom probably has the most rabid fan base of anything. I think of any cartoon, number one. But I think of anything I've ever done for sure. Because I'll post something on Twitter or Instagram.
You're great on Twitter, yeah.
Oh, thanks. New Fairly Odd Parents coming up. Bring back Danny Phantom. Yeah. Like 12 responses.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, I'm getting
very
to
passionate.
It. You know, it's but they are very passionate, and it's very exciting to see that too, because that was because that's a whole different show than Fairly Odd Parents.
Totally.
And for kids to respond to that as much as they have to, that's a real, real joy.
I think you were tapping into that sort of superhero world that really breeds that very passionate fan, you know?
True.
And I think that you're going to have fans for that for forever.
What was exciting about that is like, because Timmy Turner's 10 and Danny mm-hmm. Phantom is 14.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's that age difference. That's a huge age difference when it comes to kids. And Danny's going through that phase where he's like trying to meet girls and he's trying to get, am I going to go to the dance? And then he gets these superpowers and doesn't know how to use them.
Yeah.
And then he's got his best friend, Sam, the girl, and are they going to fall in love? Are they not? There's always that little moment we have in there.
It's great.
And then there's monsters. I think we really beat Twilight to the punch, I think.
Because
Twilight,
Absolutely.
So, you know,
Have you seen Twilight? It's pretty much a carbon copy of Danny
Phantom. Danny Phantom.
Like, thank you.
Danny Phantom, he was just 14 when his parents built a very strange machine. It was designed to view a world unseen.
Now I got two shows I'm doing, and now I've got to do storyboards on both shows and oversee both shows.
Yeah.
So that was but I loved it though. I didn't really get bored of it or tired. I just loved it. And so, but it was a lot of late nights. For sure.
Wow.
But doing it all was a lot of fun. So then you're at two mixes a week. Then you're at, you know, you're doing two recordings a week and you're doing two storyboards a week. And it's very, and you have two staffs to deal with. And
you just mentioned the keyword. I'm going to talk about my intern story. You said mixes. When I was an intern here at Nick, which is crazy, I was going to an art school down in San Diego. I had the opportunity, thank everybody here at Nickelodeon, to be an intern in 2009. And the so fortunate to be able to go into a mix session for Fairly Odd Parents.
Oh, no kidding.
And you were there and you were very nice to me.
I was?
Even after I don't think you're going to remember this because I'm sure you were very nice to every intern that
I was probably really, really drunk.
No, I
don't. No, I'm not. 2009? No, joking, kidding. Yeah, go ahead.
I accidentally almost spilled water. On the
console?
The console.
Oh, nice.
And yeah, you guys had some fun at my expense, and it was great. And it could have been disastrous. And this was my, like, real major time to be like, oh, yeah, I got to go hang out with Butch Hartman today. I almost spilled water over everything and just ruined Fairly Odd Parents.
Oh, could you imagine?
And, oh my gosh.
Well, thank you for not doing that.
Hey.
That'd be a heck of a story.
Oh, wow. My gosh. What is your thing that you're most proud of when you look back at Danny Phantom? You guys did three seasons. What's the thing that you're most proud of when you look at that?
I'm most proud of the fact that, number one, we got it done.
Yeah.
And number two, we got it done, and it's very high quality. And what I'm really, really proud of is that it really touches kids still today. They really, even younger kids, who are just discovering it right now.
Yeah.
The storytelling in that is really, really awesome. Because Fairly Odd Parents, Fairly Odd Parents has two episodes every half hour. Mm-hmm. They're two little self-contained episodes. Danny Phantom is a whole half hour story. And I wanted to try that form of storytelling. Danny Phantom starts with a cold opening before the title. So that was kind of cool. There's a little bit of the story, then the title, and then the show.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was just a different form of storytelling. Plus, I got to bring my own comic book to life, which was really cool.
Yes.
By the way, Nickelodeon makes some Danny Phantom comic books. Just saying. Yeah. Okay, moving on.
Let's get on that.
Yeah,
so that people can buy them. That's
right. Exactly. But what was really cool was that, again, it was different than Fairly Odd Parents. It wasn't the same show. And I was really proud of the fact we were able to tell another story so successfully. And that was exciting.
Another story you're able to tell very successfully, Tough Puppy.
Yeah.
Where did the idea for that come from? The world that is the anthropomorphic animals, right? Which is very different from Fairly Odd Parents and Danny Phantom. Where did Tough Puppy come from?
That came from, I was drawing, again, I always have a sketch pad with me all the time, and I'm always drawing stuff down or writing stuff down, and I'm always trying to come up with the next thing. And I kept drawing this dog in a black t-shirt. I just kept drawing him.
Yeah.
And there was a time at Nickelodeon here a few years ago where I got an opportunity to go pitch some shows. I set up a pitch and I had five ideas. I had like five great ideas. And what I always do is I always draw like a movie poster of my idea. I'll draw a big poster.
Cool.
And print it up because it seems more real when you do that. So I walk in, I have all these posters. Nothing's done, just a poster, all I have.
Yes.
I always say, can you tell a story with one picture? And for example, like look at the Jaws poster, for example, the big shark, the woman.
Brilliant.
You know, exactly.
Brilliant.
So like with a movie poster, can you tell that story? Can you get your idea across with one image? And so I come in, I remember I had all the execs sitting there and I came in with like five ideas and I had Tough Puppy, but I didn't really like it that much. All I had was one drawing of the dog, the black shirted dog, and he was punching these cats. And I had, but I had it kind of off to the side.
Sure.
And it was called Stud Puppy at the time.
Yeah.
We had to change the title because if you Google Stud Puppy, you get a whole bunch of different images. Yeah, we don't want kids to find.
Thanks for doing that research.
I did some homework, exactly. You're welcome, America. So I had these four ideas. I'm like, hey, there's this idea, and there's this idea, and there's this idea, and the execs were bored out of their minds, which I couldn't believe. I love these ideas.
Yeah.
But they said, what is that idea? And I looked over at the Tough Puppy poster. And I said, oh, that? I had no idea. I said, that is Get Smart with a Dog. That's what that is.
No,
and they
just
said,
came up with it on the
right
spot.
Right on the spot. Yeah. And they said, oh, that's fantastic. What do you have on that? I said, oh, you have a whole thing written down. I'll go get it for you. And I left, had nothing, and I wrote it all down. It took me like 2 hours, and I wrote, okay, he's this. Here's the city of Petropolis. Oh, Metropolis. Oh, they're pets. Yeah. They're all animals. And,
yeah.
And I came up with the basics in about 2 hours. I had the villain Snaptrap and all that, put it all down. And then they bought it from there. And then we ended up making it from there.
I want to talk about the Noob Network.
Yeah.
It's this new, really cool website app thing that's got cartoons, it's got games.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that.
That is an app that I just launched in July, and it's on the iPhone store. It's a free download. You guys can buy that. Get it for free.
You're welcome, America.
You're welcome. Thank you, America. That's the thing. We're going to make America great again. Yeah. That's my China. Anyway, that's my Donald Trump.
That's
anyway,
really good.
Thank you very much.
How'd you make your hair do that? That's amazing.
I know, it's weird, right?
And
I know.
Then you fixed it right back. That's
I know.
Great.
Astounding.
It's astounding. Yeah.
Why'd you bring 10 wigs in here, Butch?
Yeah.
So, but anyway, Noob Network is, I have a lot of ideas I've always wanted to do. And when you work for a studio like Nickelodeon or any other studio, studios take a long time to, if they do say yes to an idea, it takes a long time to get it done.
Sure.
And I'm very impatient. And so I wanted some place I could do my ideas and I have to wait anymore. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to start making cartoons and put them on YouTube on my own.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't want my cartoons to look like everything else on YouTube. And so I wanted to make my own YouTube. So I came up with this little land with these little characters called Noogs, and they're like little Smurfs.
Yeah.
And I wanted the kids to be interactive with the app. And so you go on the Noog Network, you get a Noog. He's like your little avatar. He walks you around.
Yeah.
And you can go watch cartoons. You can watch live shows. We have a bunch of live action shows we've written and produced and directed.
Very cool.
Yeah, they're all on there. We have video games, and you can buy other Noogs too. You can collect them. Mm-hmm. And what I really want kids to know is that it's a place. It's number one. It's a safe place for kids. That's our slogan.
Love that.
Yeah, yeah. And it's free. Mm-hmm. You only spend money. There's a few in-app purchases you can buy extra money for extra shows or Noogs and this and that. And I really want it to grow. And so like, if I pitch an idea to Nickelodeon, they say no, it goes on the Noog Network. It goes right there.
That's awesome. One thing that Nickelodeon did say yes to is a new show that you're working on, Bunsen is a Beast.
Yeah.
Tell us about that. I'm incredibly excited.
Oh, very cool. Bunsen came out, again, always have an idea ready. I had, I always have a poster ready. A few years ago, Russell Hicks took over Nickelodeon as the head of animation here. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's senior VP, whatever big title he got. But yeah, Russell's the man, Russell Hicks. Russell and I have known each other for a long, long time, and great guy. Another piece of advice out there for people, always be nice to everybody, because you don't know who's going to be where, especially in the entertainment industry. I'm nice to everybody anyway. I try to be. You said I was nice to you. I didn't yell at you, hopefully. But, you know, here's this guy, Russell, I used to work with, and now Russell's running Nickelodeon. And it's like, oh, hi, guy I was nice to.
Yeah.
and Russell is a great guy. But he came in my office one day, and I had this poster sitting there. I was working on Fairly Odd Parents and Tough Puppy. And I had this poster called Bunsen is a Beast. It was just a kid and a monster kind of looking at each other.
Yeah.
And he goes, that looks really cool. What is that? And I said, oh, it's a story about a kid and a monster who become best friends. He goes, we should really make that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
I really had nothing. I was like, okay, cool. So I started working on it. Bunsen is the first beast to ever go to a human school. And by the way, don't say monster. Don't say the M word. Not the M word.
No,
but M word's about we're their beasts.
Yes.
So Bunsen wants to go to school, and he wants to really, really do well and doesn't want to scare anybody. And so Mikey Monroe is this kid who's like signed up for every club in school, and he's head of the welcoming committee.
Ah.
So Mikey has to help him get through school. And, you know, Mikey's just trying to get to school without getting murdered. And, you know, now he's got this beast hanging out with him.
Yeah.
But the beast is actually nicer than most of the kids in school. So that's the story. And
that's
great. And then Bunsen's got a cool monster house that Mikey gets to go into. We get to explore the world of monsters, which is going to be a blast.
Yeah. Because
it's like Fairly Odd Parents. There's really no rules.
Yeah.
I mean, Fairly Odd Parents has the rules, but it's about magic. And, you know, Bunsen really has no rules because monsters can do anything. So now we have to figure out what those rules are.
That's awesome.
What do monsters eat? How do they sleep? Where do they go? You know, what's their favorite actor? All that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Did you finally make up that favor to your brother, Mikey, by naming Mikey after?
Good catch. Very good. Because every show I came up with after Fairly Odd Parents, I was like, I'm gonna name him Mike.
And
Mikey Phantom didn't work. So just Danny Phantom, and then Tough Puppy.
It doesn't rhyme. It's got to be Tough Puppy, man. Sorry, man.
Exactly. Yeah. Listen, we're gonna make it up to you. We're gonna put your name in this. Yes,
it's
exactly.
It's gonna be the most luxurious, beautiful name.
Exactly.
In a cartoon show.
It's
you've
gonna
ever
be
seen.
A huge cartoon.
Huge.
We're super excited. These are fantastic people. But yeah, so Mikey Monroe is named after my brother Mike Hartman.
Great.
Yeah, so I made that.
Now
up.
You guys have finally made up. He's finally happy.
I gotta throw one in there for you now, Hector. Yeah. I gotta figure something out. I don't know.
You're gonna make me cry. Don't do that, Butch.
Hector the Spectre Detector. Maybe there's a show. Danny Phantom. A team up. See what I'm
how
saying?
How do you guys come up? How did you come up with this?
It's one of those
hold
things.
Hold on to this guy.
Oh,
the idea is spilling out of his noggin.
The guy in the old shirt.
It's gold.
The man in the old shirt.
It's gold, and the shirt is old as I am. That's amazing.
The sweat's as old as you, too. That's the exciting part. Yeah, my DNA. We could build another Butch out of this DNA, like Jurassic Park.
Yeah. Butch, this has been an absolute pleasure.
Well, you're Hector,
thank
it's nice to meet you again, man.
It's great to meet you again.
I'm glad you got a job. I'm glad you're employed.
Yeah, me too.
This is very exciting.
Very cool.
No, it's great, man.
But
thank you.
But more importantly, I got to talk to an animation legend today, and my favorite thing is that you're actually a great guy.
Oh, thank you.
You know, they tell people don't meet your heroes. Not in the case of Butch Hartman, ladies and gentlemen, because he's just a lovely human being.
Oh,
so
thanks.
I really want to thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Appreciate it, man. I hope we can do this again.
Absolutely.
All right, thank you.
Hope you guys enjoyed my conversation with Butch as much as I did, but I would love to know who you want to hear in the seat across from me. So find Nick Animation on social media and let him know on Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, Tumblr, and Facebook. You're not going to want to miss an episode of the Nickelodeon Animation Podcast, so please, please, please visit nickanimationpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts for more episodes and tons of bonus content like behind-the-scenes photos of Butch and me from the podcast, as well as original production art from all 937,000 series that Butch has created. That's not an official number. Just so you know. Thanks to the awesome crew who puts this podcast together. This podcast is produced by
Jonathan Highlander,
Dana Vasquez Eberhard, Kelly Smith,
Andrew Huber.
Original music by Useful Creatures. All of the incredible social media for our podcast is made by
Narbe Manassians,
Greg Nix.
And thanks to the man who works the controls and makes me sound better than I have a right to,
Manny Grover.
Until next time, thanks for listening to the Nickelodeon Animation Podcast, and keep watching cartoons.